Today's daf is Bava Metzia, daf Ayin Beis. We are holding on the bottom of daf Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. We're in the middle of going through the five different interpretations of the case where a Jew can be the middleman in a ribbis situation between a guy and another Jew. So there was some case where there was a heter to do that. We're trying to figure out what exactly the case was where you don't say ein shlichus la'akum, so the Jew is not really being the middleman, the Jew is really violating ribbis. Then the Gemara is going to discuss what if you have a ribbis deal with a guy and then the guy is megayer, he becomes a Jew. So what do you do about the ribbis situation that you had from before he was Megayer? The Gemara is also going to have machlokas whether you can collect the keren on a ribbis deal. You have a loan with ribbis, so can you at least collect the actual loan if that's in the shtar, even though obviously you can't collect the ribbis. The Gemara is going to try to link that to a discussion whether shtari muktam can collect from the later time, meaning just because there's something wrong with the shtar, does that mean that the entire shtar is completely disqualified, or maybe no, whatever is good about it, you're still allowed to use. The Gemara is going to discuss whether shtar that's invalid, let's say shtar muktam, something like that, creates a shibud nechasim on some level, whether even if it's an invalid shtar, and Rav is going to try to distinguish between two types of invalid shtaros. There are some shtaros that never should have been written, and some shtaros that should have been written, they were just written incorrectly, and therefore they're invalid. But maybe that's the difference between a shtar that creates a shibud nechasim and one that does not create a shibud nechasim. Then the Mishnah on Ayin Beis Amud Beis is going to discuss when one can and cannot prepay for things where the price might go up. I'm going to give you $100 today for $100 worth of wheat at today's prices, but by the time you actually deliver it, that wheat might be worth $150. So that might look like ribbis. I'm giving you $100 and some time later, you're giving me $150 worth of produce. So what exactly is the gedder of when one is allowed to prepay for such items? The Gemara is going to discuss that. The Mishnah is going to emphasize this concept of Yotza HaShar, when there's a Shar Kavua, when they establish a price. So the Gemara is going to spend some time figuring out what that means, Yotza HaShar. What does that mean that there is a Shar? Where is there a Shar? Who has the Shar? So that's going to be the final discussion on the daf. So let's begin. We are at, I believe, Ika de Amri, Amar Rav Ashi, about 8 lines before the end of the page. So the Gemara, we had gone through already 3 different interpretations of the case where a Jew can be the middleman in a ribbis situation. So we're going to have 2 more interpretations. Ika de Amri, Amar Rav Ashi, ki aminon ein shlichus l'nachri. When do we say ein shlichus l'nachri, that a guy is unable to make a shliach or be a shliach? Hanimili, well, there's no concept of shlichus for a guy. Hanimili inu l'didon. Avlanan l'didhu avinu l'shliach. The guy cannot be our shliach, but we can be the guy's shliach. Therefore, if I had borrowed money from a guy with ribbis and I was ready to return it, but then another Jew comes along and he says that he would like to borrow the money with ribbis, he would like to continue that the terms of that loan sometime further, I am now becoming the shliach of the guy to make that loan, and that's therefore okay, because I can be the shliach of a guy. A guy can just not be my shliach. Says Gemara, v'had Rav Ashi barusahi, that Rav Ashi's shita is an outside shita, it's not an accepted shita. Maishne inu l'didon d'lo, why do you think a guy cannot be our shliach? D'chsiv, because the pasuk says, atem, gam atem, l'rav shluchachem. That your shliach has to be a ben bris. So ma atem b'nei bris, av shluchachem b'nei bris. So anan l'ditu nami. So when it comes to us being their shliach as well, ma atem b'nei bris, ka'amar. So it only includes b'nei bris. Elohad Rav Ashi Barusihi. So Rav Ashi's shita is an outside shita. It's a shita that is rejected. So instead the Gemara says, let's suggest a 5th and final explanation of the case where a Jew is able to serve as a middleman for a non-Jew's lending money with ribbis. Ravina Amar, Nihi de Shlichus L'Nachri Leslei. Granted, there is no concept of Shlichus for a guy, but Zechia Midrabanan Islei. He does have the ability to have Zechia, meaning one can be on behalf of the guy. One can make a kinyan on behalf of a guy. So let's go back to the case. Reuven borrows money from Bob. Bob is a guy. Reuven borrows money from Bob and with ribbis. The loan comes through, Reuven's ready to pay back the money and the ribbis. Shimon comes along and says, no, give me the loan, give me the money, I'm happy to borrow that money and continue the ribbis arrangement. Reuven checks with Bob, Bob says, go ahead and do it. This is not a violation of Reuven lending money to Shimon with ribbis, because when Reuven gives Shimon the money, what Shimon is doing is he's being kona the money on behalf of Bob, so that's the payment of the loan. Then Shimon himself is re-borrowing that money from Bob. But because you have that idea that you could be zoche for a guy, that there is such a concept of zechiah the guy, that's why Shimon is able to be zoche the money on behalf of the guy, and therefore it's not a ribbis situation at all. Where do we have such an idea that even someone who has no shlichus will have zechiah? Mididahavi a katan, just like a katan. By a katan, even though he's not a bar shlichus, he's still a bar zechiah. You could still be zochan behalf of a katan. So here also, it's not going to be any different. A guy is not a bar shlichus, but he is a bar zechiah. The idea that there's zechiah lekatan is a prominent idea when it comes to ger katan, when it comes to the idea of being megayer a katan, that we're zoche for him in his gerus, because we assume it's a zechusulo, we assume it's something beneficial to him. That's the kasha that Tosus deals with in Ksubas Daf Yud Aleph, that if a katan only has zechiah midrabanan, how does his gerus work? Meaning, how are we going to let such a person who went through a gerus katan marry a Jewish girl? L'chara, he's only a Jew midrabanan if he only had a zechiah midrabanan. So that's a kasha that the Baliyat Tosus work on. But says the Gemara, this comparison between a katan and a guy is in fact not a great comparison. Velohi, just because a katan has a chiyah midrabanan does not mean that a guy has a chiyah midrabanan. Yisrael asi l'chal shlichus, akum lo asi l'chal shlichus. Because the Jew, the katan, one day will be a bar shlichus, so therefore the Rabbanan instituted a notion of zechiah for him. But the guy who is never going to be a bar shlichus, unless he converts, but if you just allow the passage of time, the guy will not become a bar shlichus, so the Rabbanan are not going to institute a din of shlichus for him. Now, the idea that we had said that, so why is it not ribbis? It's not ribbis when you're serving as the middleman for the guy, because Shimon is being zoche for the guy when he takes the money. And there is such a concept of zechiah. Rishonim point out, yeah, but we're saying there's such a concept of zechiah midrabanan. So on a daraisa level, Shimon really can't be zoche for the guy. But if we're dealing with how does the fact that you can be zoche midrabanan get you out of ribbis min haTorah? L'chara, this is a ribbis midaraisa situation. So and there is no zechiah midaraisa, it's only a zechiah midrabanan. Some of the Rishonim actually take out the girsa midrabanan and think that Ravina holds that there's zechiah min haTorah. But most of the Rishonim keep our girsa. So if you keep our girsa that there's zechiah min haTorah, which it seems that you should, because you know the raya from Katan would seem to be also midrabanan. So how does that get you out of a ribbis midaraisa problem? The Ramban suggests that it could be that the whole isser over here of ribbis is only an isser midrabanan, since in actuality you're paying the keren and the ribbis to the guy. It's not an isser ribbis midaraisa midrabanan. It's you're just paying it by giving it to the person the guy said to give it to. So it could be that the whole problem is only midrabanan to begin with. The Rashba and the Ritva suggest that no, whenever you're dealing with Dine Mamanis, when the Rabbanan institutes something in Dine Mamanis, it has Da'oraisa implications, because we have a concept of Hefker based in Hefker. So it's not like Stam in ritual law, when the Rabbanan make a din where it's only Tofes midrabanan, only has it's only powerful on a Drabbanan level. When it comes to monetary law, the Rabbanan makes something, so Hefker based in Hefker. Now no longer belongs to that person, belongs to that person. The Rabbanan have the right to declare Hefker based in Hefker, which works even on a Daraisa level. The Rashba raises the question, though, how do I know that a guy doesn't have Zechiah Midaraisa? Meaning we're saying, oh, even though he doesn't have Shlichus, but he has Zechiah Midrabanan. The idea of Zechiah, the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Mem Beis, says is not really related to Shlichus. Zechiah is Lav Mitam Shlichus. Zechiah comes from its own separate limud. So how do I know that a guy is not included in that? So if you can say, oh, whenever there's not a Gilui in the Torah, that there is zechia, the assumption is that there's no zechia. Well, then why by shlichus do I need a gilui in the Torah to say a guy is on the outside, that the guy is not included? It should be whenever there's no gilui in the Torah that he is included, he's automatically not included. So the Rashba suggests that since the parsha of zechia is a parsha mechudeshas, you need a gilui, a special gilui that a guy is shayich to that parsha as well. But without a pasuk beferish to be marbe a guy, there's no zechia to a guy. But by shlichus, when it's, the Torah says it with regard to truma, that shluch shalom kamoso, so you need to say that such a thing is not shayich to a guy, even though he is shayich to truma. Zechia, there's no riba beferish that there's zechia li Yisrael. It's a gilui b'Torah. So when it comes to a guy, there's no gilui, and therefore there is no zechia. So that's why we work with the assumption that a guy does not have zechia min haTorah. How do I know a katan does not have shlichus min haTorah? The Gemara says, oh, let's compare guy to a katan, and we know a katan doesn't have shlichus min haTorah, but yet he still has zechia midrabanan. So Rashi says, we know that a katan doesn't have shlichus min haTorah because the parsha of shlichus is about truma and hegdish. That's where the Torah tells us about shlichus. These are all things that a katan cannot do. The Torah uses the word ish. These are things that a katan is unable to do. So the Ketzos says, it's not really entirely true. The Ketzos points out in Siman Kuf Pei Ches that a mufla samach le'ish trumasu truma vekdesho hegdish. If a child is close, he's close to bar mitzvah, he's a mufla samach le'ish, he is able to be makdish things, he is able to declare something as truma. And the sugya nidam dav memvavim beis says that that's a din da'oraisa. So if the whole parsha of shlichus is learned from truma and kachim, and a katan does have the ability to do those things, why doesn't the katan have shlichus? Furthermore, Rashi in Kiddushin Daf Mem Beis says that the reason a katan cannot make a shliach is because ikur shlichus is said by a get, and a get is only by a gadol. And he says from there we learn nezeu neshech that a katan cannot make a shliach. Why does he give a different limud from what he says over here? Over here he doesn't mention a word about get. Over here it's truma, it's hagdish, and all of a sudden over there it's all about get. So why the different limud? The Ravid in the Hasagos on the Rambam Gerish in Parakir Alachatas writes that we learn from Atem Gam Atem Ma'atem b'nei das af shluchachem b'nei das, that both the shliach and the mishaleach need to be b'nei das. So the Ketzos says, yeah, that's like Rashi about Truma, that Truma is only by a Gadol because he needs to be a Ben Das. So says the Ketzos, the Rambam gives a different reason of Ein Shlichus L'Katan L'Shitaso, that a Katan is Samach Lish Trumaso Truma Min HaTorah. So he couldn't give that reason. But the Ravid holds Mufla Samach Lish is not the Oraisa. So you have to sort out what the real reason is according to different Rishonim. It really depends on what you really hold about a Mufla Samach Lish giving truma and being makdish things. So that's something that has to be worked out. Okay, says the Gemara further now. Tanu Rabban, we have a brisa. Yisrael shalava ma'os min anachri b'ribis. Let's say a Jew borrows money from a guy with ribis. And v'zakfan alav b'milva. And then they decide to write it all into the shtar as one big chov. They no longer count it as a separate payment of ribis. They write it up in such a way where that it's one big chov that he owes him. V'nisgayer, and then the nachri is megayer. Im kodim shenisgayer zakfan alav b'milva. If they already made it one big chov before the gerus, goves a keren v'goves a ribis. Then you can collect the keren and you can collect the ribis, because by the time he was megayer, it was already one big chov. But if he only became a milva after the gerus, goves a keren ve'eno goves a ribis, then you can only be gover the keren, you cannot collect the ribis, because you're not allowed to collect ribis with a Jew, and he's now a Jew. And the same is true if it's the opposite. If a guy had borrowed money from a Jew with ribis, and they had now formulated it as one big loan, vinnis gayer, and the guy converted, if before the gerus they already turned it into one big loan, goves a keren v'goves a ribis, then you can collect both the keren and the ribis. But if only after the gerus there was zakef lav b'milva, they turned it into a loan, goves a keren, they turned it into one big chov, goves a keren ve'eno goves a ribis, then you can only collect the keren, you cannot collect the ribis. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Nachri Shalava Mos Misrael Beribis. Rabbi Yossi says, no, there's a difference. These are not mirror images of each other. You cannot take these two cases and say that they're the same, that it all just depends on when was it Zakfan Alav B'Milva, before before or after the gerus. No, there's a difference between whether the guy, the current ger, was the malve or whether he was the love, Rabbi Yossi says. If the guy had borrowed money from the Jew with ribis, bein kach ubein kach, goves a keren vegoves a ribis. The Jew is always allowed to collect that ribis. Even if they were not zakof alav b'milva, the Jew is allowed to collect that ribis. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Huna, Halacha, Rav Yossi, and we paskin like Rav Yossi. Amar Rava, my time with Rav Yossi. Why would that be the case? Why is a Jew allowed to collect the ribis from someone who has since converted? You're gonna collect ribis that's gonna be accruing, and he's a Jew. So Kadesh Lo Yomru Bishvil Ma'osav Niskayer Zeh. Because when it comes to gerus, we have to make sure that people don't think that there was an ulterior motive in the gerus. So the guy has a Jewish loan shark after him. Someone, you know, high interest rates, easy, convert, and then you won't be able to collect on any of it. No, we don't want people to think that he's being megayer in order to avoid the ribbis, so we need to make sure that he's still going to pay the ribbis even after he's megayer. There is a discussion in the Rishonim over here, this idea that if he's zakav alav b'milva, like the Tanakama, before the gerus, so then he doesn't have to pay the ribbis. The Rush writes that if it's lo zakav and b'milva before the gerus, then the Rush writes that this din, that if you're not zakav b'milva before the gerus, that you don't collect you're able to collect the ribbis if it is zakav alav b'milva. If you're not zakav alav b'milva, then you're not able to collect the ribbis. Says the Rush that you're not allowed to collect ribbis at all, even the ribbis that accrued before the gerus, because since it wasn't zakov b'milva before he was megayer, it's ki'ilu you're being notel the ribbis right now. It's not that the ribbis has already accrued and therefore that's goy ribbis. No, it all comes at the shas piron, at the time that he's actually paying it. So that's still that's collecting ribbis from a Jew. And the same thing he says a nachri that borrows money from Yisrael, if it was not zakov b'milva before the gerus, he can't collect the ribbis, even the ribbis from before the gerus. So says the Magen Mishnah in Perkei Avot Tzmalva Belova, based on the Rush, in the name of Yesh Mefarshim, that it's just like the Rush. He says, but Meikra Din, really you should have been able to collect the money from before the gerus, even if it wasn't Zakov Milva. But he says this must be a Takanas Chachamim to follow the Zakifa Lahachmir. So, but if you're Zakov B'Milva before you're Megayer, there's Machlokas Rishonim what the Rush would hold. I mean, let's say they are Takas Zakov B'Milva before the gerus. Now, what does that entitle you to do? Does that only entitle you to collect the ribbis that accrued before the gerus, or does that even entitle you to collect the ribbis that accrues after the gerus? Meaning the lamashal, imagine someone gives a 1 year loan and there's an interest rate, so they know that $100 of a loan is going to mean that in 1 year, based on a slowly accruing interest rate, you're going to have to pay me $200 next year. 6 months into it, the guy converts. So we were zakav alav b'milva before he converted, and we wrote that he owes me now $200. That's the way we wrote it up in the shtar. Does he in fact owe me $200? Because by the time he converted, there was a shtar that says that he owes me $200. So does he owe me $200, or do we have to start doing the math and say, well, how much of that interest accrued while he was still a guy? This is a further machlokas Rishonim, what the Rush would hold in that case. The Rav Elchanan just points out the svara of the machlokas is the gedder of the chi of ribis. Is the chi of ribis chal each day like a schirus, that each moment that the loan continues, the chiv of ribis is chal, and therefore you cannot collect the ribis that continues to accrue after the gerus? Or do we say that no, when I lend you the money, that's when you're chayiv to pay me the ribis? So at the time I lend you the money, you're a guy, and that's when the chiv is chal. It's just that you don't have to actually pay it until the end, but the chiv is all chal, mishas halva'a. So that's what seems to be the machlokas over here. That's Rav Elchanan's ha'ara. Tanurabanan says, where we have another brisa. Shtar shekasuv bo ribis. If you have a shtar that ribis is written into the shtar, konsonos oveinu govelos a keren velos ribis. We make a knas, the person cannot collect the keren, nor can he collect the ribis. Divrei Meir. I mean, obviously, he can't collect the ribis, but you're not even allowed to collect the keren on such a shtar. V'chamom goves a keren veinu goves a ribis. V'cham say, no, you can collect the keren, that's the money you lent, so you're allowed to collect your money, but you're not allowed to collect the ribis. But Maika Miflagi, what are they arguing about? Rameir, sovr kansin, natera, Rameir also make a knas on that which is mutter, atu that which is aser, and the Chacham say, no, there's no such knas of hetera atu isura. Tosos over here in Dibra Maskel Shtar, Tosos pointed this long Tosos, quotes from the Ri that according to Rabbi Meir that we make a Knesset, you can't even collect the Keren, it means you can't collect it at all. Meaning even if the Lova admits that he owes it to you, you're not allowed to collect. So or even if other Edom come that and say that he owes it to you, still you're not allowed to collect. I mean, it's not just that the Shtar is bad. It's one thing to say, okay, so the Shtar is bad, so I can't collect from the Chasim Mishubadim, whatever extra power there is to Halvah B'Shtar, as opposed to Milval Peh, so that's what you can't do. No, says the Ri, you can't do anything. You can't collect the money at all. The Knas is so consuming that you're not allowed to collect the money at all. But Tosas quotes from the Rivam that who understands that a mayor made the Knas only that you're not allowed to collect from Mishubadim, that it shouldn't have the Koach of a Shtar, but you're still allowed to collect from B'nei Chorin. That much you're still allowed to do. The Rashba brings a Raya to the sheet of the Rivam, but asks Tosos in the name of the Riva on the sheet of the Ri, that according to Rav Meir, you're not even allowed to collect the Keren, even no matter what. So it turns out that Chote Niskar asks Tosos. Tosos raised this question earlier in Baba Kama, actually. Tosos raised this question that Chote Niskar, because the guy borrowed money with Ribbis, and now he doesn't have to pay back his Chov. So it's an Isser to borrow money with Ribbis. So isn't that a violation of Chote Niskar? So the Tosos suggests that the Malva is the one that wanted to make money, so he's the one that we make the Knas on. The Lova didn't want to make money at all, obviously. He was only going to lose money from this deal by borrowing money with Ribbis, and therefore it's more important to make the Knas on the Malva. Tosos further asks in Dibra Maskel Shtar over here, how could we be Machshir Shtar, even Reb Meir, who passes is only because of a Knas? So on the Daraisa level, it sounds like the Shtar is going to be Kasher Midaraisa. It's just a matter of a Knas that we're not going to let you collect the Keren. The Eidim that signed on the Shtar signed on a Shtar that has Ribbis. Doesn't that automatically make them Edom Psulim, and therefore the whole Shtar is automatically Pasul? Because the Isra of Ribbis on the Malva, the Lova, the Arif, and the Edom, it's on everybody involved. So shouldn't that automatically make them Edom Psulim, and therefore automatically disqualify the Shtar? So are we getting into Knas? No Knas. It's automatically no good. You have no Shtar, you have no Edom. So Tosa suggests a few Terutzim. First of all, he says, since most people think that the Isra Lo Sasimun of Neshach is only on the Malva, the Lova, and perhaps the Arif, and they don't realize that it's on the Edim, doesn't pass them the Edus, which is a fascinating idea to Halach and Hilchus Edus, that if it's the kind of Avera that people regularly violate and don't even, are not Machzik Isser, they don't think of it as an Isser, even though it is. It could be a very severe Isser, but people don't think of it as an Isser. Such an Isser would not pass the Edus. It doesn't pass the person the Edus. Tosos, it's still not allowed to do it, but it just doesn't pass the person the Edus. Tosos further suggests that maybe we're only talking about Ribbis Midraban. So these Edim are only don't become pasul when you sign on a shtar that's only Ribbis Midrabanan. Then they further suggest that maybe there are Edim that are Meyid, that these Edim were signing the shtar under penalty of death, that they were their lives were being threatened. So therefore, it's not Yahari Valyavar, they're allowed to sign a shtar with Ribbis. Now they are testifying that it is in fact true, but they were forced to sign because someone was threatening their lives. It's quite a nukimta to make on the whole case. The Ketzos, however, has an entirely different approach, which l'chora, if you accept the what it's based on, it becomes obvious. There is a sheet of the Marshach in the Tshuva in Chel Gimel Simen Aleph, the Ketzos quotes in Simen and Beis, that all psulei edus, when it comes to the sibas hapsul, that which makes them pasul, they're only pasul after that. They're not pasul already meikar at the time that the cause of their psul is happening. So the edus itself that makes them pasul is not a pasul edus. It's only mikan ulaba. So if that's the case, this shtar is not going to be pasul. It's every other shtar these edim will sign in the future that's going to be pasul. But this shtar is still going to be kosher. And the svara is that only after we're makabel that edus do they become rishayim. If we're not makabel the edus, then they're not rishayim at all. So he points out that's l'chora only when it's not a rasha d'chamas. But if it's a rasha d'chamas, if it's the kind of rishos where the person is stealing and he's making money off of false testimony, then the psul would be even the mafreya. But if you accept that marshach, then you see the answer is obvious, that they're not going to be it's not going to be possible shtar in the daraisa level because these edim are still kosher from before. Okay, says or they're only possible rather mikan laba. Says Gemara for the last skinny line on ayin beis amin alf. Tanan asam shtari chov amukdam and psulin vamucharin ksherin. If you have a shtar chov mukdam, the date in the shtar was written before the actual loan happened, that is possible. Why? Because once the shtar is written, you're going to be allowed, the lender is going to be allowed to collect from any nechassin that the borrower had at the date written in the shtar. But at that time, the loan didn't happen yet, and the shibut should not have been created yet. So what if the borrower had sold some of that property before the loan actually happened? The people he sold it to should not have to lose their property. There was no shibut on their property. And now the lender is going to be able to go and collect from such properties. So that is terrible. That's a terrible avla. That's possible. But a shtar chov meuchar, you're lending me the money today, or you're being mechayiv the money, I'm being meshabin myself in the money today, and I write that it happened at a later date. This happens all the time, especially this time of year. You have chasnas on Sundays at 4 o'clock or whatever, and shkia is like 4:30, and so you hit Bein Hashmashos time with the. So what do you do when you're filling out the ksuba? So many people are makbid, they just fill out they just sign the edim on the ksuba under the chuppah when it's ready after Tesach Chavim, so they can know that they have the right date. But the one thing you want to make sure to do is better make it mu'uchar than to make it muktam. You better put the later date rather than to put the earlier date. You put the earlier date, it's a chshash of a psul. You put the later date, it's not a chshash of a psul. So I guess the best thing is probably to sign it later. But the problem with that is a lot of times things get, especially if the Masada Kedushin is not very experienced, so to throw a curveball at him like that, he's going to forget something else. Al Chasna recently, where he was trying to keep every chumra in the book. He did Badekin and this and that, and he forgot like certain basic things. The Kala's veil wasn't on throughout the whole chuppah. It was there were certain obvious things that were just that were just missed. So okay, so you have to know when you could be machmir. So says Gemara Mukdam and Amay Psulin. Why is Shtar Mukdam Pasul? Nihid Logav Mizman Rishon Nivum Mizman Sheni. Why Pasul the whole Shtar? Just Pasul the Kedima. Just Pasul the nechassim shabadim from that time between when they say the loan happened and when it actually happened. But whatever was nechassim shabadim from the time that the loan actually happened, now you should still have a shibun on. Now you should still be able to collect. I'm Rav Shimon ben Lakshmi Machlokas, and you have Rav Meir. That's exactly our Machlokas about a shtar that has ribbis. Do you chuck the whole shtar if it has ribbis, or do you say no, keep the good part? Don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. So that's the Machlokas. Say Machlokas. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilu Teim Rabbanan. The Rabbi Yochanan say no. Even the Rabbanan would agree that the shtar muktim has to be thrown out entirely. Gzeira Shemi Yigva Mizman Rishon. You can't leave such a shtar around. He might collect from the first man. So we don't want to allow collection with the shtar at all. As opposed to the ribbis situation, everyone sees that it says ribbis in the shtar. No one's going to allow the collection of the ribbis, but you can still collect the keret. There was a guy that gave his pardes as a mashkon to his friend, who he had borrowed money from. And the idea was he was going to enjoy the peros of that pardes as payment for his loan, and once it was fully paid off, he'd give back the pardes. Achlat Flashni, he was already in it for 3 years, he had this pardes. Amalim is obviously Nali Mutav. He loved the pardes so much, the lender loved the pardes so much, he said, you know what, if you're willing to sell it to me, I'm willing to buy it. I want to buy it permanently, and that would be great. V'ilo, but if you refuse to sell it to me, Kavishnal Shtar Mashkanta, I'm going to hide the shtar that says that it's just a mashkon, V'amina L'kuchi B'yadi, and I'm going to claim that I have already purchased it. And guess what? I have Cheskas Gimel Shanim. I've been here for 3 years now, so everyone's going to know that it's going to look like I purchased it. Azul kamakni lebino katan. So what did the guy do? He went and he was makni it to his child who was a katan, v'hadr zavna ne'ale, and then he sold it to him. So then he sold it to the other guy, but the sale is invalid because it already belongs to the child who's a katan. Zvini vade lo avi zvini. The sale definitely is invalid. What about the money that the guy paid for the sale? He paid for this pardes. Now the sale is invalid. So that money, zuze kemilva b'shtar dami v'gavim nechassim mishbadim, adim l'kemilva al peh dami v'enegavim nechassim mishbadim. That money was given on the force of a shtar that's totally invalid, right? On the force of a mechira that was totally invalid. is that considered a milva al peh, or is it considered a milva b'shtar? He asks for the money back when he realizes he's not getting the pardes. I don't have the cash. Can he collect from the chasim u'shabadim, or can he only collect from the chasim nechorin? Amr Abai v'lav haynu d'Rabbi Yassi. Isn't this exactly what Rabbi Yassi spoke about? Amr Rabbi Yassi, modu b'shtar shekasu. If a person admits that he had written a shtar, einu tzarech l'kaimo, you don't have to be mekayim the shtar v'gavim, nechasim u'shabadim, and you could collect from Nechasim Shabbatim. So here also, he's moda that he sold it to him b'achrayus, and if the shtar is bottled with regard to the mechira, because of the shtar matana that he had given to his son prior to that, it's still not mevatel the achrayus. So you're still able to collect from Nechasim Shabbatim. Amalei Rava, so Rava says, mi dami. So there's a critical comment that Rava makes. How can you compare our case to a case of moda b'shtar shekasvu, where you have a case that that there's a shtar that's not really a valid shtar, but a moda that it's that I wrote it. Hasam nitan liyikasev. Such a shtar should have been written. It's just that there was some sort of psul in the shtar. We can't be mekayim the shtar, but it's a shtar that should have been written, and therefore you could still collect from the chasim u'shvadim when I'm moda. Hachalo nitan likasev. Over here, the shtar really never should have been written. Says Gemara, Yasim Reimer v'kamer la'ashmeit. The Reimer was saying over this chilik between that which was nitan likasev and that which is not nitan likasev. Amalei Ravina the Reimer el hadam Rabbi Yochanan gzerah shem yigva mizman rishon neimel lo nitan likasev. What about our case of the shtar muktam? So we said you got to chuck the entire shtar muktam because the whole thing once you might collect from the earlier time, we have to throw out the whole thing. So, why don't you just say it's lo nitan likasev, and therefore, I'm sorry, that's lo nitan likasev. You don't need to say that shema you gave mizman rishon. The whole thing is lo nitan likasev, and therefore it should be chucked anyway. Amalei hachi hashta. Hasam nihid lo nitan likasev mizman rishon, al nitan likasev mizman sheni. No, that shtar was nitan likasev. The shtar muktam was nitan likasev, just differently. It should have been written mizman sheni. Hacha lo nitan likasev klal. But over here, it really should never have been written at all, because it was already the field, the pardes was already given as a matana. So there never should have been a shtar mechira at all over here. So that's the difference. So says Mara will challenge again. Alohad tanya l'shvach karkoos ketsad. That which we say that you're not allowed to collect from the shvach karkos from the chasim u'shabadim because of tikkun ha'olam. So what does it mean the shvach karkos? Hari shagazel sada mechavero. Person steals a field from his friend who machra le'acher. So Shimon steals Reuven's field and sells it to Levi. Vishbicha, Levi makes improvements on the field. Varei yotzim mitachas yado. Now Reuven comes and takes the field away from Levi because it was stolen from Reuven. Kshu gova govas hakeren min chasim u'shabadim. When Levi comes to collect from Shimon, he can collect the keren, what the field was initially worth, from Nechasim Shabbadim, v'shevach gova min Nechasim Necharin. But the shevach he only collects from Nechasim Necharin. Neima lo nitan likasev. Why don't we say that shtar never should have been written, and therefore the whole thing is invalid, and you can't even collect anything from Nechasim Shabbadim? Hachihash, the Gemara says you can't compare the two. Hasam ilamad yarmen nichale delonikre gazlana ilamad yarmen nichale delekem behemnusei mefayase lemari mokum lelishtare. In that case, he'll do whatever he wants. Whether you hold that the reason that a gazlan would be interested, well, what happens if Shimon then turns around and buys the field from Reuven after Shimon had stolen it from Reuven, sold it to Levi? Can he go buy it from Reuven and then confiscate it from Levi? So the Gemara says no, he's not allowed to do that because we assume when he subsequently buys it from Reuven, he's really buying it for Levi. Why is he buying it for Levi? Two possibilities. Either because he doesn't want to be called the gazlan by Levi, so it's in his best interest not to be called the gazlan, or because he wants to keep a good reputation that when he sells something, that it's going to be that it's going to stay that way. So either way, that's his purpose in going back to Reuven to buy the field. Over here, the whole point is to just get the field away from this guy who took my pardes for 3 years and is now claiming it as his own. So I just needed to figure out a kunz to get it away from him. So I gave it to the katan, and the shtar was just a ruse. I don't want to be mekayim such a shtar. Such a shtar should be completely discarded. That's the so therefore, even the two cases of lo nitan likasev are entirely different from each other. Now, why is it dafka that when he wanted to keep the shtar away from the guy, he gave it the b'no katan? L'chara, the pashtus is when you give it to a b'no katan, that the field now belongs to the katan, and even though you're only doing it to be mavriach from the malve, but since he gave it to him stam, the matan is going to be chal. And but if that's the case, why dafka give it to a katan, not to a gadol? So it could be that he gave it to the katan because he's afraid that the malve is going to, if he gives it to the gadol, the malve is going to go to the gadol and try to convince him to sell it to him for a cheap price, and therefore the malve will end up with the field anyway. You give it to the katan doesn't have the ability to be makne, so you know that it's safe that the katan is not going to lose it. However, the Ritva quotes a yesh mefarshim that the katan doesn't acquire the field either, because it's obvious that he's only giving it to be mavriach from the malve. It's like giving a moda'a on the field. It's like when you know that someone's forcing you into a transaction, you can go in front of two edim and say, I'm hereby harini mosim moda'a, I'm letting everyone know that that transaction is something I'm being forced into, and I have no das to be makne. So this is like a moda'a, that he's actually, by giving it to the katan, he's not actually giving it to the katan, it's just a moda'a. And says the Ritva in the name of Yesh Mefarshim, that's effective enough to actually keep it away from the other guy, and still it doesn't belong to the katan. The Ritva raises the question, why not Taka just give a moda'a and let it be known that it's not a mechira, then you don't have to give it to the b'no katan. So so he says it could be that the guy has a good lawyer, so when he writes the shtar that he's buying it from you, he makes you sign a clause, ani mevatel kol ha-moda'os, that with the shtar I'm being mevatel any moda'a that I gave. So if he has a good lawyer, so you have no you can't work around that, but you can give it as a matana to a katan, because that's not a direct moda'a. So that's the kunst of giving it to the katan. Okay, says the Mishnah, ein posim al peros ad sheyetzei ashar. You're not allowed to set a price for peros until there's a set price in the shuk, meaning I can't give you money today for peros to be delivered in 3 months from now if those peros are not available in at today's prices, if those peros are not available in the shuk already at those prices. But yatzah ashar poskanaf b'she'en l'zeh yesh l'zeh. But if it's yatzah ashar, then we could be posik, because if you wanted to provide me the peros today, you could easily take this money and buy the peros in the shuk for those prices. Hayahu t'chila l'kotshim. If you are the early in the harvest and you're one of the first farmers to harvest the grain, posikim ala gadish v'ala avit shalanavim. So you could set a price on the unprocessed grain, or on the vat of grapes that are not yet pressed, v'alamat on shalzesim, or the vat of olives that are not yet pressed, vala bitzim shal yotzer, or on the clay balls of the yotzer to make pottery out of, vala sid, or on the limestone mishashakul bikivshan, from the moment it goes into the kivshan, meaning even though these products are unfinished, uposikim al zevel kol yimos hashana, and zevel also throughout the year you could be posek a price. Rabbi Yossi omer in posen al zevel om kenoyse lo zevel ba'ashba v'cham matirim. Rabbi Yossi says no, he needs to have a supply of zevel in order to set a price for it. And the Chum say, no, he doesn't need to actually have a supply of it on hand. Uposikimo bishara gavoa. You're allowed to be posek with the shara gavoa. Shara gavoa means a lower price. That if it goes down in price, that I'm setting a price today that I want 5 pounds of produce for my dollar. If it turns out that by the time you deliver 10 pounds of it, I can get 10 pounds for that dollar, then I'm going to want 10 pounds of produce. That you're allowed to do. It's just that I'm locking it in that if 2 pounds of produce is going to cost a dollar, you're still going to owe me the 5 pounds of produce. So I'm locking that in. But if it goes down in value, then it's called gavoa because it's more fruit. More fruit for the dollar, but it really means a cheaper price, so it's a little misleading. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Af Pli Shelo Pasukim El B'Shar Gavoa Yochel Omer Tein Li Kazeh O Tein Li Asmosai. Even if you didn't actually posek Shar Gavoa, you never made that deal in the shtar, you could still say, look, I gave you a dollar, either give me my dollar back or give me a dollar's worth of produce at today's prices. Amar Basi Amar B'Yochel In Posukim El Shar Shabashuk. You can't be posek just based on a shar that's out there in the market. Amar Le Rabbi Zeila Ravasi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Afilu Kedormus Hazeh, even like a large market where the price is already set, is that still not good enough? Where the price is going to be somewhat permanent? Amar Leilam Rabbi Yochanan B'Shuk Shal Hayaros Lokvi Tarayu. No. If it's the shuk in the cities where the prices aren't so set, that's not an established enough price to prepay right now. If you're going to assume that even the more permanent prices aren't permanent enough, and that's not good enough to prepay for peros, then what would the Mishnah be talking about? The Mishnah says that Yatza Ashar, you're allowed to do it. So what does that mean, Yatza Ashar? So maybe it's talking about a unique case where you have wheat that's from storage houses that are already being sold and is being brought on ships that are already being sold, where you know that price, there's so much supply, you know that price is going to last for a long time. But either way, Kamash Milan, we're being told that you don't need that. That even if it's just somewhat of a permanent price, that's enough time, the Ramban explains, enough time that when you give the guy the money, he can go and secure that wheat today at that amount of money, and it's not going to change in the amount of time it takes for him to get to the shuk. The price is not going to change in that short window of time that it takes to get to the shuk. That's good enough. Then you can establish the price. You don't need to know that it's going to last for longer than that. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up with Tanur Rabbanan.